Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to another titillating episode of Fat Guys of the Movies.
It's the big fat holiday special.
Holy smokes. I can't even believe that the holidays are here, Kevin.
I know, isn't it? Well, the holidays are here. They're almost here. They're really close.
I can't believe that by the time folks listen to this show, it will be Christmas Eve.
That's right.
We'll be celebrating, little baby Jesus Day. And it's just... To me, the year has gone by so fast. Yet another year on Fat Guys the Movies.
I know. We are approaching our 200th show.
I know. Very, very rapidly approaching our 200th show. Not my 200th show.
No.
But
you're
about
256
show.
Or so. I would love to do a clip show, but I was talking to... I think it was when I was talking to Fozzie Bear not too long ago, because he has his own podcast. And,
you talked to Fozzie Bear?
Well, Fozzie Bear, B-A-R-E, from the podcast. Podcast. But I was telling him that we wanted to do a clip show. I said, but at 200 episodes, there's just, I don't have the time for that.
Yeah, it would be tough. We would need an intern. So if anyone would like to be our intern, we are on show 194. You have basically 6 or 7 weeks to put together an all-time clip show. So if we have a listener out there who would like to try their hand at it, please feel free.
Well, considering there's 200 shows, there'd be close to 200 shows, if you figure the 40-hour working week, that's more than a month.
Right. I think we should just let Jeff Hall host the show that week.
He probably could.
It'll be the celebration by us just taking a week off.
If you're not Jeff Hall... you may not know how to get a hold of us, so why don't
that's right. You should go to fatguysatthemovies.com. There's plenty of information there. You can also go to iTunes and search Fat Guys at the Movies. That is the show that you'll be looking for, not other words, just those words. And you can download us, subscribe to us, or rate us. We encourage you to rate us. We want to get Fat Guys at the Movies on the front page of iTunes.
Yeah.
Because that would be hilarious, because that would mean half-naked Kevin Carr on the front page of iTunes.
Woo!
You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or leave us a voicemail, area code 740-205-6456.
Yes, I got paid. That number does work. I pulled a Neil, and it expired for about a week.
Nice. So there's that, and you can also get us on the Twitter. Kevin is twitter.com/KevinCarr with 2 R's, and I'm twitter.com/rejects. There's also a Facebook page somewhere, but I have a feeling that if you followed most of what I just said, you'll figure out where to find us on Facebook.
It's pretty easy to find us. And one other thing is we are working on, because when we started this, it was just Fat Guys at the Movies, and now the Fat Guys at the Movies site, it has a whole bunch of different things on it audio-wise.
Right.
So we are refining the feeds. So if you want to just get the Fat Guys at the movie show and you don't want all the other stuff,
I cannot wait.
You can do that.
To be able to not subscribe to just the Fat Guys at the movies.
Yes. So we will be putting out, we'll be refining the feed so you can listen to this. You can listen to the Idiot Boxers. We'll go over more.
That seems to be the only reason we get emails these days.
What? I don't want to hear all this.
I don't want to hear this Kevin Carr's weekly movie capsule review crap.
Whatever.
Take that.
Should we move on to the? We
got to do your big announcement.
This is going. You're listening. If you're one of the people who are early listening to this, you can listen. You're listening to this on Christmas Eve. This has gone live, Christmas Eve morning. In the morning, in the 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock hour. I'm not exactly sure when they're playing it. I am going to be featured on the CBC from Canada. Their show, The Current, which is their national morning show. So if you're one of our people up north. And you're listening to The Current, you should listen for me because I get to talk about the worst Christmas movies ever made with some other folks.
That's pretty awesome, eh?
It is pretty awesome, eh?
Yeah, I like Canada. I've been there many times, and I'm a big fan.
I love Canada. I just wish they could get an interstate system like our freeways. That's the only, my only beef with Canada.
Fair enough. Well, you know how much I love hockey.
That and poutine. I don't get that stuff, man.
No, poutine's awesome from what I hear. I've never eaten poutine, but I do love hockey.
Poutine's a bit of an overkill. I mean, I love gravy, mm-hmm. but poutine's like, I mean, it's like having like gravy with butter on it. Because all poutine is
why wouldn't
like,
you want to have anything with butter on it?
It's like gravy, and it's like fries, and then they throw like cheese and gravy on it. It's just basically they dump stuff on it, and it can be good, but it is that sticks to your ribs a little too much food.
I can't believe I'm hearing you say this. This goes against everything I know about you.
Can you believe it? I'm like, wow, that's might be a little
I'm calling shenanigans.
You can go ahead and call it.
Anyway, speaking of shenanigans, we have a review. We're going to review we're going to talk about a bunch of movies, okay?
Yes.
We are going to talk about several movies this week, most of which I have not seen intentionally because two of these just did not connect even in marketing. They looked Yeah, I probably will work out better. So we're going to talk later about Little Fockers and True Grit, the new Coen Brothers movie. But right now, we're going to talk about Gulliver's Travels, in which Jack Black plays a travel writer who disappears in the Bermuda Triangle and lands on an island of teeny tiny little people.
Where are you from?
I'm from the island of Manhattan.
Were you the president?
I was actually known as President the Awesome.
I challenge you to a duel! So you accept!
Make a move.
You cannot surrender.
You gave us your word.
I'm sorry. I'm just a guy from the mailroom.
Have you ever read the story, the original story, Gulliver's Travels?
Yeah, it was about, like in my dad's grade.
Yeah, my dad read it to me when I was really young. I don't remember much about it, but I'm pretty sure there was not a giant robot in that story.
There's a giant robot in this movie?
There is a giant, well, I mean, there's a human-sized robot, which is a giant robot to the people. It's this movie. Here's the thing. I didn't hate it like I thought I would, simply because I'm like, well, it's just a kid. It's not trying to be anything more than just a big, stupid kids movie.
Right.
But unlike Yogi Bear, which actually, in my opinion, hit the marks it was trying to make, this one is like just like having Jack Black snort a pixie stick and go trampling through a movie. And if you don't like Jack Black, if you have a low Jack Black tolerance, you're just gonna want to stab yourself in the face when you see this movie. Because it's everything.
That should be the poster quote. If you have a low Jack Black tolerance, you're going to want to stab yourself in the face.
That's true. Well, and he starts doing his skiddly diddly doodle. It's like not even the credits aren't even over when he starts doing that through the movie.
Oh, boy.
And I mean, it hits the same beats, but it's just a redonkulous movie, and it's not very funny. If you love Jack Black, and he's really going for the kids crowd, because he's like hosted the Kids' Choice Awards, and he recently had a guest spot on like iCarly. So I guess if you're like seven and you think Jack Black's funny, you're going to like this. I mean, he urinates on people to put out a fire in one scene in this movie. Again, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I mean, how else is he going to do it?
Well, you know what? The best way to sum this movie up is I saw somebody post on Twitter. I honestly can't remember who said this, so I apologize for any sort of plagiarism. But this person said, I am not going to tell you what happens at the end of Gulliver's Travels, not because it's a spoiler, but because you just simply won't believe it. It's like they ran out of script and they're like, let's do this. And that's how we're ending the movie. It's sort of like getting out of a bad Saturday Night Live sketch.
Right.
So, did I like it? Man, no. Did I hate it?
Now I'm curious enough to go see what the ending is, if it's that crazy. Stupid.
It's a little crazy. Poor Emily Blunt.
Poor Emily Blunt, indeed.
She's such a good actress, and she's so pretty, and then she's in this.
All right, well, give us the grade.
It kind of sucks.
Kind of sucks?
Kind of sucks. Well, you'll find out on the end of this break why I only said kind of.
And we have returned on Fat Guys the Movies, and we are going to stop for a moment and rewind and go back, because I need to hear why, after pretty much just shoveling poop all over Gulliver's Travel, Kevin gives it a kinda sucks. I know, I was there when the rating scale for this show was created, and there's at least one level lower to my best memory. I know I miss a lot of shows, but I know that there's at least one level lower than kinda sucks. And it sounds like Gulliver's Travel is below that.
No, because if you were to compare it to something like Furry Vengeance, we've crapped all over that a lot this last couple weeks. But Furry Vengeance was a failure on all levels, and it wasn't funny. And this one, at least, I felt that it was it at least knew what it was doing. That's the thing. I mean, it wasn't trying to, it's like, let's take this idea and just be dumb with it. And it's Jack Black being stupid. Plus, I'm also factoring in the fact that I just can't stand Jack Black. So I'm trying to say maybe it's not as bad to somebody who thinks he's funny. And it's not nearly as bad as Little Fockers, man. Oh, my God.
Okay. Hey, let's not spoil
it. Oh, my gosh.
The upcoming review of Little Fockers.
Did I show my hand at all?
As if anyone was super curious about that one.
Do you know what my status was on Facebook this week when finally it released on the 22nd?
We're not friends on Facebook.
Who cares?
I don't know if you knew this.
No, I said I really want to punch Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro in the nuts.
Don't you want to stab them? I heard there's a lot of stabbing of...
I don't even
know. Why don't we just talk about that now?
Movie. Okay, you want to do Fockers now?
Let's get this Little Fockers thing out of the way.
All right.
It is a movie. It was filmed and has been released in which Ben Stiller and Robert De Niro need a paycheck and reshoot the first movie all over again.
Hey, Grandpa Jack.
Yay!
Greg, this is Jack Burns.
Yeah, I know. I could tell from the caller ID.
Greg, stop talking and listen. There's always been a patriarch to lead our family through good times and bad. I've come to realize that the next in line to the Burns throne is you. So I ask you, Greg, are you prepared to be the Godfather?
I'm watching you.
Well, I have eyes too. So I'll be watching you, watching me.
Did you see the first two films? Did you see Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers?
Yeah.
Did you like them?
Yeah, I like the part where he hit the volleyball and it smashed the girl's face.
Yeah, that was the original, the first
the
one.
The milking the cat one thing was funny.
Meet the Parents was funny.
Yeah,
I thought Meet the Parents was a cute movie. It was fun. Meet the Fockers, what I appreciated about it wasn't as good as the first one, but at the very least it went somewhere different, and it was like, let's take this, and now instead of him having to deal with, it's, you know, the son-in-law and the father-in-law, or would-be father-in-law, let's deal with the clash of the parents, which is a reality of anybody who's ever gotten married or just had their...
Right, and I think they found decent enough actors with them.
Decent enough? Dustin Hoffman, he's okay.
With Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand to play the crazy parents.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. I thought it worked, and I thought both of those movies, like I said, Little Fockers or Meet the Fockers wasn't as good as Meet the Parents, but it was an okay sequel. I mean, as sequels go, it wasn't bad for sort of like, we didn't know we were going to do this kind of thing. The problem with Little Fockers is it here's what it played like. It plays like a movie that was made because they said, we have everybody contractually obligated for a third movie, but our contract but that option runs out in like 9 months. So I don't care if we have a script or not, we have to shoot it. And that's what and so then they just wrote this script around it. The movie literally opens with opening scene. Is Jessica Alba as a drug rep going to talk to Greg Fokker as the head nurse of this place, and they end up giving this fat man an enema.
Right.
And that's the highlight, man. I mean, it's just like that is symbolic of the movie.
Jessica Alba giving a fat man an enema is the highlight of a movie.
Jessica Alba and Ben Stiller giving the man an enema.
Well, I mean, once you had Ben Stiller in there, it makes it okay.
And let's just say that the movie flows from there. That's how I would say that. And plus, it rehashes.
That's double entendre.
Ooh, no, it rehashes every.
You meant poop.
I did mean poop. It rehashes every single joke from the first movie, rehashes every single plot point from the first movie where Robert De Niro's character Jack is wanting him, her to dump him so she could go with Owen Wilson because he's better. And I mean, and it is a massive executional misfire of epic proportions. Not funny. I did not laugh once in this movie. I rolled my eyes constantly. And it's just, there was no heart and soul or anything to it. It just was. Jessica Alba has a part in it, and she strips down to her underwear in one scene. And you'd think I'd be like, well, at least that was good. And yes, I enjoyed watching it. But it was just such a poorly done movie. It is so stupid and so dumb. I hate this movie.
I'm glad I didn't see it.
You are so lucky, man.
So does this one get totally suck?
It totally sucks. Yeah, and that's honestly, after I saw Little Fockers, and then like 2 days later, I saw Gulliver's Travels, I'm like, at least it's better than Little Fockers. You know, I mean, I'm like,
see,
it's
this
better.
Is why you went soft on Gulliver's Travels.
That's part of the reason. And also, if you look at like Little Fockers is trying to recapture what it did in the beginning. It's trying to be a bigger movie than what it is. It's trying to be a better movie than what it is. And at least Gulliver's Travels, it hits exactly the mark that it's trying to hit. And there's a certain amount of respect I can have for that.
Okay.
So yeah, Little Fockers totally sucks. Little Fockers, excuse me.
Little Fockers is the
totally sucks.
Asylum version in which everyone dies.
Which would probably be better. Mega Shark versus Little Fockers.
Nice. Cool. Well, we're going to take these last few minutes and talk about perhaps the most anticipated movie of the Christmas weekend, which is True Grit, in which the Coen brothers remake the classic John Wayne Western about a teenage girl whose father is murdered and seeks help from a U.S. Marshal to bring the killer to justice.
Mr. Cogburn, in your 4 years as U.S. Marshal, how many men have you shot?
Shot or killed?
Let us restrict it to killed so that we may have a manageable figure.
Mr. Cogburn?
What do you want, girl?
I'm looking for the man who killed my father. The man's name is Tom Chaney, and I need somebody to go after him.
What's your name?
My name is Matty Ross.
You saw this, didn't you?
I did, absolutely.
What'd you think?
I don't miss Coen Brothers movies.
Heck yeah, man.
But it's interesting, and I enjoy the work of the Coen Brothers. Mm-hmm. I enjoy their entire filmography. I don't think they've ever really done anything. Yeah, well, I mean, I've enjoyed even their worst stuff.
Yeah.
And I love everything that is Coen-y about their movies. Yeah. All of the intricate quirk and all of the very unique twists they have on all their characters, stuff like that. That said, I enjoyed True Grit a great deal. I thought Jeff Bridges was fantastic in the role. It is basically the dark version of the 1969 classic.
Yeah.
1969 movie is very light. It deals with some dark themes, but it's a very light movie, and it's a sign of its time, it's a more innocent time. Yeah. This is a very dark version of that. But I don't get the whole it's so Coen Brothers. It's just a well executed version of the same story, and there's nothing very Coen-y about it. It's not played for humor. I found it to be a very serious movie.
Some very funny scenes in it, and if you go back and watch the original, there's some very funny scenes in that as well.
Yeah, but it's not like I don't think the Coens did anything necessarily ambitious with it. They just pretty much did the same story from the book, and it came out to be the same movie, just the dark version of the story. So I don't think it's not a mind blowing experience, and it's not. It doesn't move the bar forward like the Coen Brothers have in the past, but it's really good, and it's beautifully shot, and it's the score is great, and the acting is great. It's just really well done. It's just but it's not as ambitious as some of their other stuff.
I don't know. I think it was because they weren't going quirky, because they weren't they. I thought that the fact that they made the decision to not do this really bizarre Coen Brothers-esque stuff, it worked. Whereas you see some directors try and work outside of their wheelhouse and just fail.
Right.
Like there's no tomorrow. And I thought that they said, we're just going to go make a straight Western. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
But where their humor lies, I do find there are some very funny things, like No Country for Old Men. The funniest parts are not, they don't read as a joke. It's just the delivery is a joke. The whole scene with Rooster Cogburn on trial for shooting this guy in the beginning has some very funny moments to it that I don't think were ever intentional, maybe not even in the book. And if you watch the original, they're not funny in the original, but they're very, the delivery is spot on.
Jeff Bridges makes them funny.
And I love the fact that Jeff Bridges, he didn't try and do John Wayne. He did his own version of Rooster Cogburn, which plays well to the movie, which is why I don't think it tramples on the first. Although I think, I do think that it's Haley Steinfeld who played Matty Ross, the girl, she's fantastic. The girl who played her in the original movie, Kim Darby, she kind of stole the show. And I think same thing happens with this one.
I think it's their most straightforward movie. I would say that it kind of rocks, and it's worth seeing. I just it really hasn't stuck with me.
Yeah. I'm going to say it totally rocks. It may actually make my top 10 best of the year, not because it was so awesome, but it's just this year was not a great year for film.
All right, and we'll be back in a moment.
A hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We got a couple more things to say about True Grit. First of all, I want to clarify, because I kind of rushed out of there, I do think True Grit's a fantastic movie. It's not as good as No Country for Old Men, but I think it's their best since No Country for Old Men.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it'll probably make my top 10 list, but just because I haven't been wowed more than like two or three times this year in the theater.
Right.
And usually it happens more. Like No Country for Old Men sailed to the top of my list because I loved it so much and it totally wowed me. This one was a good movie, but it kind of plays against the expectations because you expect something awesome from the Coens.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think that's more to my point, you know, that I was kind of getting at towards the end of when we were talking earlier, in that, you know, you expect a Coen brother. I expect a Coen brothers movie to have a kind of a lasting impact on me, as I walk away from it, and for me to find in a second viewing a lot of detail that I missed and things like that. You know, I'm constantly going over movies like No Country and Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and seeing just so much richness and detail and execution that I've not seen before, and that is there, and it's always kind of stuck with me. And I don't feel that way about True Grit. I feel like it's their most straightforward movie. It's their most un-Coen like movie. And I find it interesting that a lot of people are saying, "Oh yeah, it's very Coen-y." And I'm like, "No, it's not. It's basically taken directly from the book, and most of the dialogue's directly from the first movie. It's just like you said, it's the delivery. The delivery is what makes it interesting." So
I actually rented the original. I'd never seen the original before, just a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I rented the original because I got a screener of the new one. So I got to watch the original first. May have been a mistake because there are scenes that are just like word for word out of the book.
Oh, totally, yeah.
And it just seems pedantic by watching it a second time when you've just watched the original. But that's not a criticism. That's just more an observation.
Right. And I really, and it, they didn't, like I said, they didn't, it doesn't feel like they did anything really ambitious. They just set out to do a straightforward remake, because they took it based on the book, but I mean, it's pretty much a remake.
It's straightforward. Well, it's a reimagine.
It's just a regular old Western, but it's a good Western. Well done, Western. So,
I'll tell you one other thing.
There,
people glorify their quirkiness, because if you take like recently one of their most quirky movies, Burn After Reading,
which was
okay. Mm-hmm. It was a decent movie, and it reeked of the Coens. I mean, it just, you could tell the quirky, goofy weirdness of the Coens.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't think, I mean, that didn't make it a good movie. Whereas I think True Grit's a far superior movie than Burn After Reading.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, people are looking for the strange from them. You know,
they're expecting it now.
Yeah, you have stuff like Lebowski, you know, Brother, but they've made some pretty straightforward movies lately. And I, you know, No Country is another good example where it wasn't necessarily the Coen brothers. It was, you know, Cormac McCarthy's novel that really took it pretty straight. And I think at this point, the thing you have to applaud the Coen brothers for is picking awesome source material.
Oh yeah,
and they just have the technical ability and the ability to draw in talent to make it all work. So I think that's what makes True Grit worth seeing is they just execute it really well.
Can I add one more thing about Little Fockers, since we're adding to...
Please.
Well, it's important to talk about it in this segment, because this does not go on the radio, and I can be a little more clear. There is a scene in there, and this is why I don't have a respect for a movie that does this. Have you ever seen, when you watch a movie, and like, you work on a website, right, you know, so you know what it's like to work, you know, and you've done set visits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch a movie and they portray a character that says working on a website, and they portray it inaccurately, it's going to irritate you, right?
Right.
You're going to be like, well, that's just stupid, and that's not hard to research, and why'd you even have to do that? There's a scene in there where Dustin Hoffman and Barbara Streisand reprise their roles as the Fockers. And Dustin Hoffman's talking about, because he's in Europe and he's on leave from his life because he needs to recuperate, because apparently he was talking about how his wife was coming up with all these sexual positions, and he's like, I pulled a hamstring doing the reverse cowgirl.
Right.
This is what pisses me off.
You don't use your hamstring muscle doing the...
Not as a guy.
He pulled his hamstring?
Yeah. This is a fine point, sure. But if you know anything about the names of sexual positions, that's like sitting there and saying, oh my gosh, I sprained my ankle sleeping on the couch. Because if you don't
know... The couch is a dangerous place, Kevin.
Well, I don't know. But... If you know anything about the world's reverse cowgirl position, the woman's doing all the work. The guy's just lies there.
Right.
You know, if he would have said, I pulled a hamstring doing a pile driver.
Right.
Then I'd be like, there you go.
Or I pulled a hamstring having sex in the shower.
Yeah, but I mean, that's possible. It's just like, it was like they just came up with the funniest words, what sounded the funniest.
I pulled a hamstring doing the wheelbarrow.
They didn't even go on Urban Dictionary to look at what the reverse cowgirl was.
I pulled a hamstring doing a reverse double dirty Sanchez.
Yeah. if you would have said I pulled a hamstring moving your mother to the reverse cowgirl position, I could buy that.
Right.
But they probably couldn't do that because they probably would have gotten an R rating.
Really?
For saying that? Yeah, probably. Because then the ratings board would have then the ratings board would have been like, wait. That just sounds
dirty. As if the squares, the MPAA, even know what reverse cowgirl is.
They don't, but it sounds dirtier saying I had to move your mother into that position than, you know. I'm sorry. This is a fine point, but this is the laziness of the script. That's what bothers me.
Fair enough.
So there.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Fuck you, little fuckers.
Okay. Okay, let's move on here, and we're going to talk about something about box office from last week. And Tron was a big winner. I know
that it was a winner. It wasn't a huge winner. It was a winner.
It was a success. It wasn't a smashing success, but it was successful. I think Disney had high hopes for it, and then they predicted very low. And then they seemed to be fairly satisfied with $44 million over the weekend, and that. Sure, good for them. That's what I have to say. It made $44 million, which seemed to be a little bit higher than what it was being predicted at about 35, right before the weekend. But I think you get the inflation from IMAX and 3D, which it did very well. And so I mean, it didn't blow anybody away, but it's successful so far. And
I'll say this, because there was all this hubbub on Sunday and Monday as people were analyzing the numbers. I don't think that mid-40s is a bad opening for Tron. Could it have been better? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Could it have been a lot worse? Yes.
Right. Did Disney spend a fortune on this movie? Absolutely. Will they make it back? Probably.
Absolutely.
The movie's
going
to do great overseas.
The movie will do well. It'll do decently, and because it's not going to have any competition this weekend.
Right.
True Grit's a totally different thing. I think Fockers and Gulliver's Travels are going to completely bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So for the next 2 weeks, it's got the IMAX and the theaters locked up. And the only competition in terms of people actually going to see movies they want to see are the award films, which is going to give us some competition in the general sense, but it's still going to do well. It doesn't have to give up any of the big screens until Green Hornet in mid-January.
Right.
And on top, then you got, like you said, the foreign. But what people are forgetting is there's so many times, this is why Disney is so smart in a lot of the ways that they do, and why some people hate them so much for it. Disney maximizes the potential of any property. And I mean, you've got this, you've got all the tie-in with the Daft Punk soundtrack.
Right.
You've got all the tie-in with the toys.
Right.
The toys are huge, and the merchandising and all that kind of stuff is just beyond what people just see. This movie could make $100 million and end there domestically. It's still going to be profitable. Plus, right. I don't think they really spent as much marketing as they said. That's just they're rolling up a lot of budgets into it.
Right. So, Tron successful. Let's call it a good opening weekend, and it should have some legs. And what else finished? Sorry, I just closed out my chart.
Yogi
here.
Bear made
Yogi Bear was Yogi 16 Bear million. Probably not what Warner Brothers was hoping from Yogi Bear with an $80 million budget. So probably not a success. However, again, not a ton of competition coming. It's the only really decent animated out there. However, Gulliver's Travels and Little Fockers could dent it. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, hopefully that people go see Yogi Bear instead because it is the lesser of three
evils.
It's
better 3D than, I mean, because Gulliver's Travels, a conversion, which is only half bad because there's so much green screen effects, you can actually pull some depth out of that. But
right,
Yogi Bear has way better three dimensional
right
viewing.
So there's that. And what do we think this week? I'm thinking Tron wins again. Maybe
I think Tron's probably going to win. I do not think I'll be surprised if Fockers makes $15 million.
Right, and I think I think True Grit will probably be in that same arena because I think the Coen brothers they'll get decent.
I think they're all looking at, you know, if I were to say, I'd say it's going to be a horse race between True Grit and Fockers for the $15 million second place spot, and then Gulliver's Travels about 10.
Right.
Part of the other thing is because Gulliver's Travels doesn't open until Christmas Day.
Mm-hmm.
So it only gets 2 days out of that weekend.
Right. I think Westerns do pretty well. I mean, if we think about the Coen brothers, let's see, what was there? A Serious Man did not open well at all.
Well, it wasn't.
But it was in like 200 theaters. Burn After Reading opened to $19 million. So I don't really think that you shouldn't be expecting a ton out of the Coen brothers. No. But I think True Grit will do pretty well. It's got some talent in it, and people will go see it. But I have a feeling Tron's gonna have legs, and hopefully people get the 411 on Little Fockers. It's getting terrible reviews. I mean, it's just Kevin; it's everyone.
Everyone.
So
I am honestly surprised they screened this.
Yeah.
With as bad as it was tracking, I'm quite stunned they screened it.
Fair enough. Cool. So that's box office. Time to move on to our Fat Guy Five of the week. Got a very fun one for you this week. Most of it is, I got a couple of these in here that I can talk about. It's just five insane Christmas movies because, you know, this time of year we talk about movies like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and It's a Wonderful Life.
The best and the worst.
We talk about the greatest, you know, Christmas movies that we're fond of and things like that. We never talk about the weird ones.
Yeah.
And this week I was a little bit inspired by this week's list that Cole Bias put up on Film School Rejects, the creepiest Santa Clauses in cinematic history. So I thought, let's talk about insane Christmas movies. And
that's right.
Because Kevin always comes up with good ones.
Ah, well, that's because I'm a genius.
Well, that's because you've seen some really terrible movies.
That might be it, too. Should I start with the first one?
Yeah, first one's all yours, man.
This one is... now, I actually have to give... credit to somebody who was on that who's on CBC with me, Alonzo Duraldi, who has recently published a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, and it lists like a whole bunch of Christmas movies. You go check it out. You can get it on Amazon and everywhere else. But one of the ones that he's pointed out, because I listened to him when I was on, he was on the Popcorn Mafia, who is hosted by Gray Drake, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about this movie Santa Claus, and I was listening to him, not the one with Dudley Moore from the 80s. This is one from 1959, and it was a Mexican film. And a lot of people know about it because it was on Mystery Science Theater back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It is a movie in which Santa Claus is battling the devil for the hearts and minds of children, and he like kind of has them enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Santa Claus does, because for some reason all these kids from around the world are working in his workshop. He doesn't have elves. Apparently they went on vacation. And it has the devil. It has like the assistant devil going and trying to get kids to be naughty. And Santa Claus, and if you look at Santa Claus, he looks insane. It is the most bizarre, crazy movie you'll ever see. And I haven't seen actually the uncut version, but apparently the uncut version's even weirder. Because Mystery Science Theater had to cut some of it out. It's a funny movie to watch, but it is an absolute mind trip. So definitely go check this movie out because it's strange.
Nice. Well, speaking of strange, the second one on our list is a movie that actually came out this year, and it played at Fantastic Fest. It's called Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale. It's from Finland, and it has a bunch of things going for it.
Does it have a good finish?
Wow. Basically, the story is this town in the mountains in Finland, and this company, this British company, is doing an excavation. They are digging something up. And it starts with this guy telling these workers that as they start to get closer and closer, he's telling these workers that they need to brush their teeth and don't say swear words, and they need to be good and be polite. And they're like, what is this guy's problem? Like, what is this guy's malfunction? And it turns out that basically they are uncovering Santa Claus, the evil version of Santa Claus. Well, and basically it takes Santa Claus as the arbiter of good and evil.
Oh, wow.
And okay. So, like, if you're bad, Santa Claus comes and beats you.
Awesome.
And if you're good, Santa Claus brings you presents. Oh. So, but, you know, every...
better watch out.
But as it turns out, every kid in this town is naughty. So wow. As when they let Santa Claus loose, these kids start disappearing. And then these hunters who...
when does this come out on DVD, man?
It's in theaters now. I don't know what the opening is, but Oscilloscope is releasing it in theaters. They released it December 3rd, limited release. But basically what it is that so these kids start disappearing, and then these hunters, these parents, these guys catch Santa Claus and decide that they're going to – and he is the creepiest freaking thing you've ever seen. Wow. And they decide they're just going to sell him back to this company. So the poster is them. You have to go on IMDb and look up the poster of this movie, because it's these guys with Santa Claus in this big steel bear cage.
That's awesome.
And awesome. And I will tell you, the kid actor in this, the little kid who kind of plays the main kid who figures it all out, is just as good in this movie as the kids from the original Let the Right One In. And I have no idea what it is about Scandinavian actors, little kids, but they are awesome. And they blow American kid actors out of the water. So this movie is very cool. So you should see it.
Wow. Okay. With the next one we'll talk about is Santa Claus Conquers the Martian. This is another MST3K import. It's from 1964. It stars a very, very young Pia Zadora as a Martian girl. Mm-hmm. And basically the story is the Martians have decided that they need somebody cheerful and wonderful because they're too scientifically brilliant and focused, even though they're like bizarre as hell. Mm-hmm. And they look like their costumes are made with tissue paper, because it probably is. And so they go kidnap Santa Claus and bring him to Mars, and Santa Claus has to escape. Now, what's funny is this was on MST3K. You could I don't know if you can still now, but because it's kind of gotten lost in the Mystery Science Theater shuffle. At the time it was on MST3K, you could find it like on TNT or TBS around Christmas time in the mid-90s. It is excruciating to watch without funny people talking about it at the bottom of the screen.
Fair enough. So, I feel like we talk about this one every year, and yet I continue to not see it. I need to search out the MST3K version and just watch it.
Yeah, you should.
It'll be great. I'm sure. Let's do I the have next a feeling one. My girlfriend's got it on VHS or something.
Oh, she probably does.
Yeah.
She's a geek like you.
Yep. The next one's The Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's wild ride through the world of Halloween that takes over Christmas.
Probably the most well-known.
Probably.
On this list. And it's a great movie. This is because it's an insane movie doesn't mean it's bad to see. This is a great movie, but it's such a twisted take on Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's definitely worth making the list.
Right. And I'm sorry, it's not Tim Burton's, it's Henry Selick's. Tim Burton wrote it and Henry Selick actually made the film. But it's one of my favorite alternative takes on Christmas. I think this is the perfect list for us, because there's so many cool different takes on Christmas.
Yeah.
That
and they get lost in the shuffle because everyone's watching Elf and It's a Wonderful Life. And these are great movies, but let's look at the weird ones too.
Yeah. So yeah. So Nightmare Before Christmas, another very great and creative and colorful one. Yeah. So.
And speaking of bizarre takes.
Oh boy.
Oh my God.
Did I tell you that I tried to watch this the other night?
Have you never seen it straight through?
Never saw it, and I watched it with...
And it's probably never going to happen.
And I watched about two-thirds of it, and I couldn't do it. And I had the riff tracks version.
If you can get through, like, Oh, dude, if you can get through the second commercial break, you're okay. We are talking about the Star Wars Holiday Special. And this is what's so interesting for me. I was born in 1971, so I was like five when the first Star Wars came out because I hadn't had my birthday yet. So I loved it, and I was just this kid. And then the next year, so like I was seven because the next year I'd had my birthday. It was like a year and a half after the first Star Wars came out. They said, let's do a TV special. And this is back in the 70s when you had variety shows, and they shot it on video. And so they had all the Star Wars characters. I mean, Mark Hamill looking high as a kite with, like, eyeliner on.
Do you want to hear a fun story about Mark Hamill that I learned while I was researching? Because while I had my iPad sitting there, so I was, like, researching this movie while I was watching it. Mark Hamill had just recovered, had facial reconstructive surgery from a major life-threatening car accident. Like, he almost died in a car accident. Then he had reconstructive surgery on his face. And then he's in this movie. So, like, when you see it, he is just caked in makeup, and it just, like, he looks weird and alien-like.
Which is why he looks different from Star Wars to Empire. And he's actually got the scars. They use the scars for Empire.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he looks bizarre because he's got the light eyeliner on. He's like, hi, guys, like, right in the camera. It's a story of Chewbacca's family.
It's a story of Life Day.
Life Day. Chewbacca has to get back to Kashyyyk to celebrate Life Day with Lumpy. Isn't his son's name Lumpy?
Lumpy and
his wife, Itchy.
Itchy is his father.
His old man. Yeah, Chewbacca's father, the grandfather.
Yeah, is Itchy.
And what's just so bizarre about
Chewbacca,
it is it's sort of like
I am your father.
What's so bizarre about it is it reminds me of, I just got recently on video, The Legends of the Superheroes, which was this roast of it by Ed McMahon of the Super Friends, basically.
Right.
And it was one of those, well, it seemed like a good idea in the 70s because they did these variety shows. And in the show, they have Harvey Korman doing a cooking lesson. And he has, like, Bea Arthur working at a cantina.
Right.
And she does a song and dance number to the tune of the cantina music from the original Star Wars.
Right.
Up to the first commercial break, there is no English language dialogue.
That was my favorite part. Is there's no actual dialogue in the first segment of the show. It's
like
Wookiees.
15 minutes before somebody speaks English.
It's Wookiee talking, Wookiee fighting, Wookiee weird fantasy.
Wookiee masturbating to a Diane Carroll video.
Wookiee masturbating to Diane Carroll. Wookiee with Jefferson's starship on the inside of a box. Crazy. Just absolutely insane. There is a reason why George Lucas will come to your house if he finds out you have a tape of this, and he will beat you with a stick and take it from you.
See, everybody knows about this now. Yeah. But what happened, like, you're talking 10, even 15 years ago, Lucas denied it existed. He would not release it at all, and there was this handful of people who had it on VHS because it was just when VHS was starting. People had videotaped it, but it was very hard to get those tapes. And now you can go to any sci-fi convention and you can get it. You can order it on eBay or whatever.
Right.
But it was really, really hard to find. And there was actually a period of time in the 90s that people were debating whether it actually had taken place.
Or whether it was a figment of their imagination.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the only good thing about it is the Boba Fett short, which was the first introduction of Boba Fett, and it was really cool.
Right.
So, I think that's it.
Do we have anything else to say? That really does cap it off. That is the most insane Christmas anything ever in the history of the world.
Happy Life Day.
We're going to break. And we're wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. We have talked endlessly. If you missed the middle segment, if you're listening to us on the radio, good job. First of all, you found us. Second of all, go online, go to iTunes, go to Fat Guys at the Movies on iTunes, and download the most recent episode, because we went through probably one of the most entertaining lists, the Fat Guy 5 that we've had in a while.
That's true.
Our 5 insane Christmas movies list, yes. Which had a movie that you might actually be able to see in theaters.
That's right.
And then a movie that you might not ever be able to see ever.
That's true.
So, anyway, moving on to the most anticipated segment of the night, only because it's right at the end of the show.
Yeah, because people are waiting to get out of here.
Yep, the world-famous DVD Roundup.
Ho, 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 ho. On Dasher, on Dancer, on Misty, on Cindy on. Oh, those are strippers, not the reindeer. I'm sorry.
Okay. Were you thinking about that joke all week?
No, I just came up with it. That is how much of a genius I am. I'm totally awesome.
Oh, wow. You spit fire.
Should I write it down? I couldn't think of, just like the pressure was on, I could not think of a good stripper name.
I would let it disappear
Misty,
into the void if I were you.
And that was it.
Misty, Christy.
Entice. No, I don't know.
Anyways. So we'll start with my picks this week. I only have three. The first one is Step Up 3. If you can get this on 3D and you have a 3D TV in your house, you need it because this is the movie 3D was made for.
I have to say,
this and Jackass.
I was kind of disappointed that I missed seeing. I was out of town during the screening of this. I was not able to see this in 3D.
It's cool.
I didn't want to see it in 3D.
It's everything you think it will be. It is a movie about hip hop dancing. But it's also an awesome 3D movie about hip-hop dancing. I don't even like hip-hop dancing. And it's very cool. And there's some cool... There's a very, very cool 1960s-esque singing in the streets, like street dancing thing that these two, like the two young kids do.
The two youngest? There's more young kids. What are they?
Well, I mean, they're like the youngest of the ones. And it's adorable.
They're embryos
so
doing hip-hop dancing.
It was very fun. It reminded me very much of, like, you know... That older
step
era.
Step Up 1 and 2.
No, not even Step Up. It was cool. Right. But there are some cool stuff in here that you... It's clearly just shot for 3D.
Oh, yeah.
But it totally works. So, you know, or just get it on Blu-ray. It looks good on Blu-ray, too. Speaking of looking good on Blu-ray, Legend of the Guardians, the Zack Snyder-directed Owl animated movie.
I love this
Fantastic,
movie.
Beautiful, incredibly rich, probably one of the coolest-looking animated movies. The story was pretty good, too. It's a decent action flick.
I wish that it would have done better. I just think that they didn't market it right. I don't think anybody knew what it was about from going to see. They were just like, oh, owls? Is that it?
Right. It's owls fighting in slow motion. It's awesome.
But they don't show it. They just show them flying a lot. The trailers were terrible for this.
Right. The trailer's like, watch owls fly in CG 3D.
Yeah.
And in reality, the movie's got a kind of a cool story to it.
Yeah.
So moving on, final one for me this week is Easy A, the Golden Globe nominated Emma Stone in Easy A. I've been told that she gives one heck of a cool, fun performance.
She's
in this.
A cutie in this one. I wasn't wild about this movie.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to go pick it up at some point, probably tomorrow.
I'm going to throw this down. I mentioned this last week, but since it sort of was released mid-break, The Town was Ben Affleck's triple threat movie. Also,
right,
I got,
came out on Friday with the Owl movie.
Yeah, other ones that are sort of smaller ones. Salt was a good movie. I enjoyed it. Angelina Jolie was good. The Secret Life of the American Teenager, Volume 5, I think. I can't believe that show's been on that long. But it's good for kids. Well, for teens. Family Guy, It's a Trap, the latest Star Wars Family Guy version of the movie, Futurama Season 5, and then the one I want to champion is Devil. Did you see Devil?
I have it, and I have not yet gotten all the way through it.
What? It's like 85 minutes long.
By gotten all the way through it, I mean I haven't even opened it yet.
Oh, okay.
So
it's a good movie.
However,
people crapped all over this movie because of the M.
That's what I keep hearing. I keep hearing that it did not get a fair shake.
It was it is M. Night Shyamalan in the sense that it's this sort of neat little Twilight Zone-y kind of story, but it works. Mm-hmm. It's well made. It's well done. It gets in. It gets out. It doesn't linger. It's a good movie. And I don't know why they're releasing it on Blu-ray 4 days before Christmas.
Yep.
But go figure.
Anyway, the sinker of the week is Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps, and only because while money doesn't sleep, you certainly will during this movie.
So it is
the Ambien. It's the Ambien Award winner for the movie that put the most people to sleep this year.
It's like 25% good, and by 25% good, I mean it's the 25% that Michael Douglas is actually in the movie.
Right.
Because if you watch the trailers, you think it's wall-to-wall Gordon Gekko, and it's not.
And right, it's wall-to-wall Shia LaBeouf.
I saw somebody say that they thought it would be called Monkey Never Sleeps. If there was a movie, Wall Street, Monkey Never Sleeps, I totally would watch it.
Right.
I'd watch it.
Especially if there were monkeys in it.
Well, yeah, well, we hope so.
I mean, they could just call it whatever they want.
It could be like, hey.
Nothing.
Dance at Cindy's on the stage, whatever. Anyways,
you really
I'm
got
trying
the
to go
on
for the
mind.
Stripper joke again.
You're really not. You're failing at the stripper
Let's
joke.
Wrap up.
I believe this episode should be called "Kevin Fails at the Stripper Joke."
Well, that happens now and then.
Anyway, so let's wrap up reviews. Kevin saw the two movies that are not good this week. Little Fockers, and you said...
Totally sucked.
And then you went easy on Gulliver's Travels.
Kinda sucked.
And then True Grit, I said kinda rocks, just because it didn't quite pop with me, but it's a very well-made film.
Mm. And I said it totally rocks. So we hit all four levels of grades on this one.
We did. Wow, that's very rare. Next week is our big, fat 2010 wrap-up show, so be sure to stick around to hear what we thought were the best movies of 2010, what we thought were the worst movies of 2010.
The more fun list.
And then what we thought were the interesting trends of 2010. So in the meantime, head over to fatguysthemovies.com and keep an eye out for those updated RSS feeds. You know I won't.